You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
And I know there's a lot of people out there who struggle with divorce and becoming a widow or any kind of just loneliness in general, but I am so happy that I have the outdoors as a hobby of my own that I love, that no matter where I'm at in life, it's something I'll do. And so it's just a blessing to be able to just go outdoors and hunt, shoot, or fish, or just hike and enjoy it. And I don't know how to put it into words, but what a blessing that we have that and we have the freedom to do it. We say in the sisterhood, we have a motto that you got to give it away to keep it. What we mean by that is you need to teach the next generation. You're not going to have it if they don't have it. So give it away so you can keep it.
Hey, everyone. 2 more weeks until hunting season starts. Can you believe it? To have some fun and share in the excitement, sponsors and partners of the podcast are helping me with a 12 Days of Hunting giveaway, which starts this Friday, August 20th. So keep an eye on my Instagram and Facebook pages for details. Title sponsors, Purina Pro Plan, and Boss Shot Shells are pitching in big time on this. Two companies that are awesome at supporting the bird dog community and conservation organizations. Patreon patrons, the peeps are supporting this podcast with $5 a month and keeping the MP3s rolling. I have an exclusive giveaway just for you. Our friends at Dakota 283 have made it possible to give away one medium G3 kennel with Dakota Guard and one Dine and Dash. All you need to do is give the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you get your podcast and send me a screenshot of it. If you need to get an order in before hunting season starts, be sure to use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. I hope to see some of you this weekend at Wings North in Pine City, Minnesota for the Project Upland Instinctual Wing Shooting Camp. There are still a few spaces available to register. You are going to receive 4 hours of instruction from either Kate Armstrong of Virginia Shooting Sports or Tracy Wright of Dark Horse Shooting in Washington, with the opportunity to audit the other instructor or attend the many seminars and demos offered by Rough Grouse Society, Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever. NAVDA will be there doing some dog demos. And the amazing Simon Teach on the grill will be discussing bird cleaning, meat care, and meal prep. Siren, Shotgun, Caesar Guarini, and Fabarm will all be available for you to use and try out through the weekend. And I just heard a little while ago that the Caesar Guarini 20-gauge Revenant will be there as an option. That is one of the most gorgeous guns on the market. This is a great opportunity to get properly fit for a shotgun and try some out. My guest today is Amy Ray. She is the owner of Sisterhood Outdoors. Amy has been creating opportunities to introduce women to shooting sports and share outdoor and hunting experiences with them since 2010. Amy shares her story, her why, what she does to help women overcome struggles, and of course, I needed to get into some gear and gun talk with her. All right, let's get after it. Welcome to the podcast, Amy.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you, and you're coming to us straight from Georgia, correct?
That's correct. I live in the beautiful North Georgia mountains.
Well, why don't you share with our audience a little bit of who you are and what you do?
Well, I'm Amy Ray, and I'm the owner of Sisterhood Outdoors, which is an organization that's been around for 11 years. And our mission has always been to create an opportunity for women to go outdoors, whether it's shooting, hunting, or fishing. And we do that with some opportunities that we create as a schedule of events with outfitters. And we do everything from big game to waterfowl, pheasant, dove, fly fishing, shotgunning, rifle classes. So it's a very interesting mix of outdoor activities. And we do a lot of the same trips every year because we have such a great partnership with our outfitters. So basically a guest of ours would go online and book the trip with us. And then they would be contacted by one of our members who is an excellent mentor, an expert in their field, and they would be the host of the event. So you're never going to be without a lot of information, a mentor, someone to tell you what you need to be in the outdoors, the gear list, the packing list, what to expect when you get there. A lot of our customers have never done a guided hunt before or left their home hunting grounds to go to a guided lodge setting. So we kind of prepare them for what it's like to arrive at the lodge and stay in the rooms and what the agendas and schedules are be like for taking you out into the fields to hunt. And we also teach and train about safety constantly. I'm a big proponent of firearm safety and also a firearms instructor myself. So we have kind of a great opportunity for anyone of any skill level, of any background, to join in the outdoors. And that's always been our goal.
Nice. You guys, it sounds like you make a really easy, smooth transition for people to get started. You're taking all that extra work out of it and just providing them the experience to jump in and feel comfortable doing it.
We do. I kind of say just be fearless. I mean, because I think to tell you my story is that I learned to hunt with my husband and we were on a deer lease here in Georgia together. And that was all great. But I kind of was like, wow, I'd like to have some girlfriends to hang out with too. And my husband bought me an all women's duck hunt in Arkansas. This was back in 2012, maybe. And he said, here, you're going to Arkansas for Christmas. I bought you a trip. And I was like, I don't know how to duck. I've never shot a shotgun. Like, what do you do? And he's like, you'll be fine. I'll teach you. So he got me a gun, threw me a few clays, taught me some gun safety and gave me a couple box of shells. And I took off to Arkansas and I thought, wow, I don't know anybody. I can't believe I'm doing this. But once I got there, I met a group of girls who were excited about being in the field together. Some had experience, some did not. I got to see what it was like to stay in a lodge. I got to watch duck dogs work. I got to shoot a limit of ducks. Had a bruised shoulder from not doing very well with my shotgun. But I kind of left there after one trip kind of inspired that, like, there's something about this. And it's not unique to women. Women don't need to have, you know, separate classes for everything. But what is unique about it to me as a first timer was that men and men in my family in general had shared this same camaraderie in hunting camp that I never appreciated or understood until I went and had that kind of fellowship and camaraderie at a hunting camp, you know, on one trip. And I was like, I get it now. So, like, how can we create that for more people? Because I wanted to just bottle it up and sell it.
Right. Right. No, that's so true of that experience. And I mean, have you found that there are many men that, or any that reach out to you and say, is there anything like this for men? Or do you feel in general, that's just not something they're interested in?
I think women are more likely to agree and appreciate traveling as a group in an organized way where there's an agenda and an event. I think guys tend to go with their friends and buddies and they already have it. It's been easily available to them to grab four friends and say, hey, let's go waterfowl hunting in Arkansas this weekend. In corporate America, women didn't get invited to the hunts or the golf course, you know, 25, 30 years ago. So I think those barriers were in the way early and the guys just have stayed with the tradition.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think we are now versus then as far as?
Oh, I'm so excited about where we are. Just think, cause you have a podcast for Bird Dog Girls and I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like a little bit of a veteran, been in the industry 11 years. I've grown and studied and learned and studied and learned. So I don't consider myself an expert, maybe just someone who's been around a while. And what I've seen is amazing at the growth. I want to consider the Sisterhood Outdoors, maybe someone who was a trailblazer early on, but I wanted to know that we set, you know, some good goals for achieving what we've achieved so far. There's more women's gear. The great companies that we work with, like Beretta and Orvis and Crimson Trace and Women's Outdoor News and Shoot Like a Girl, have been, you know, some of our partners this year. I don't think any of that could have been possible 10 years ago. My hunting clothing is way better now than it was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think acceptance, trajectory of numbers of women participating in the outdoors is amazing. You can look up licensing sales to get a great number for that. We are still a growing sector of the industry, which I want to continue that trajectory. And that's part of what our programming is designed to do. So yeah, I'm real excited about where we're at as women in the outdoors and opportunities for us to learn and do things.
Yeah. So of like all these events that you're doing now, what is your favorite species to hunt?
I knew you were going to ask me that. So it's a tie, and I'm going to say that because I love elk hunting because it's something my family does, and sure, I learned to do from my father.
Okay.
So if I had to choose a rifle big game, it would be that. And then I absolutely have an addiction to birds and waterfowl. So pheasant, dove, and duck, all and goose, all winter long. I've been known to get in the car and drive 6 hours to hunt for 4 hours and come home.
That's awesome. You definitely are an addict.
Yeah, now I'm like, what was I thinking?
No, that sounds totally normal to me.
It does. Good. I'm glad. I think that's a good thing. Anytime there's an opening on a pheasant shoot or a tower shoot around here, which we have a lot of the continental type shooting in Georgia for pheasants because we don't have a natural pheasant population. So those are great days for me when somebody calls and says, we got an opening. And I'm like, I'm on my way. So that's fun. And we've created so many waterfowl opportunities over the year. And we have some great outfitters that we work with too, that we just have a standing date every year. We come back. Duck lodges are kind of a fun place to hang out and listen to what's going on around the campfire. But more importantly, in the duck blind and watching the dogs work, mm-hmm, is something I really enjoy. And I really enjoy introducing that to new duck hunters and waterfowlers who've never been, because it's such a amazing experience when you get to see a good dog work.
Oh, absolutely. And with all the upland and waterfowl you do, tell me that you own a bird dog.
I do not.
Oh,
but here's the reason.
Amy.
I would love to. I look at them all the time. I travel too much. It would not be a happy dog. Like, you have to be committed to that. And with my family's schedule, it is not something I want to do for a dog's health right now. I want a bird dog. My husband would love to have a bird dog, and we just cannot commit the time that it takes.
Sure. It's a difficult but very responsible decision on your end. So
I think so. I have friends with great bird dogs. How about that?
Yeah. Well, and that's my next question too, because all the great dogs that you see, I mean, is there a specific breed that has really caught your heart that you just love watching work or you prefer to hunt with?
Wow. Some of my favorite dogs have been the Labrador Retrievers in the duck world. Mm-hmm. And there's one in particular that comes to heart. Is her name's Emma, and she's in Maryland, and she's owned by one of my staff members, and she's a goose and duck dog, and she just wants to work. Like, you can see it in that dog's eyes. And she used to be our official gun dog. Emma's retired now, which is kind of hard to believe. Of course, you would know more than anyone, but when I first started hunting 10 or 11 years ago and going back to the same lodges and hunting with the same girlfriends with the same dogs, these dogs are old now. Mm. And it's something I didn't expect, you know, that I would still be in the relationship with that outfitter or that girlfriend and watch that dog go from its prime of hunting to semi-retired to that dog's retired now because of their hips or their health or their age.
Right.
So I've seen the whole beginning to end of some of these great gun dogs that we hang out with. And I'm not committed to that for our family for 10 long years, but our favorite is by far like a Labrador Retriever.
Mm-hmm. And you like the lab for Upland as well?
Yeah, I've hunted with labs and German short hair pointers.
Okay.
And kind of a mix, really. I will say that I really like the patience that the Sisterhood of the Outdoor gives the guides and outfitters to bring in puppies and dogs in training. Because if we're in training for the women, then I don't have a problem with them having a dog out there that they need to work with while we're there. So that's something we work out with our outfitters. And it's really great to see that, because we get to see that puppy or, you know, younger dog in training and then come back next year and see it just blow us away, you know?
Right. Right. And you had mentioned you did some hunting with your dad. So how long have you been hunting, and you started in big game?
Yeah. 11 years ago, I met my husband. He's my second husband. I lost my first husband to cancer. And so I was kind of a young widow, and my husband Scott and I met, and he's a big hunter. And I was always an outdoor girl. I was always, camping, boating, fishing, skiing, riding horses, grew up on a farm, baling hay, working the gardens with my mom. So was not scared of the outdoors by any means. I just never went hunting, but no one ever invited me, and it never occurred to me to ask. So my husband taught me how to deer hunt, bought me my first rifle. I remember shooting my first deer. It was a nice 9-pointer. And I sent the picture to my dad, and he was like, "Oh my goodness, you did that." Well, my father was a world-class hunter with a very large trophy room, and he elk hunted every year. He had an elk camp he set up with some friends. And so about 3 or 4 years into my journey, my dad invited me for the first time to elk camp, and he taught me how to elk hunt. And we do it DIY. Quarter it in the field, hike it out on your back, like old school. So that has been something that I've cherished. My father, I lost him in 2019 to a farming accident. So now I'm carrying on the family tradition of elk hunting and passing that down to my children and my sister and her children. So that's the tradition of where it's got started. And I like to joke and tell my husband he created a monster when he taught me how to hunt.
That's beautiful, Amy.
It's fun. Yeah. You know, it's a good story.
Right. That's awesome that you're keeping that tradition going with the family.
Yep. I've taught all my kids to bird hunt, and we pheasant hunt, and we duck hunt together. My boys are grown. They're all in their 20s and 30s.
Okay. So what ages were they when they started hunting?
10 and 13.
That's awesome. Good for you. And they're still doing it now.
They are. And they love it. And I'll say this, and I know there's a lot of people out there who struggle with divorce and becoming a widow or any kind of just loneliness in general, but I am so happy that I have the outdoors as a hobby of my own that I love, that no matter where I'm at in life, it's something I'll do. And so it's just a blessing to be able to just go outdoors and hunt, shoot, or fish, or just hike and enjoy it. And I don't know how to put it into words, but what a blessing that we have that, and we have the freedom to do it.
Absolutely. Amen to that. And the ability for our children and our children's children to be able to have those same experiences and opportunities.
Absolutely. We say in the sisterhood, we have a motto that you got to give it away to keep it. Mm-hmm. And what we mean by that is you need to teach the next generation. You're not going to have it if they don't have it. So give it away so you can keep it.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more about the Sisterhood Outdoors. How long ago did you start?
So in 2010, the girls that I'm friends with started the company, and it was called Babes, Bullets, and Broadheads. They ran it for a few years and got a lot of recognition and really got some traction going on some of the the events that they did, and they were getting into life changes where it was harder for them to maintain. So I purchased it from them and I renamed it and rebranded it the Sisterhood Outdoors, because that's kind of what I was like, be what you are. Like, if you're Mike's Pizza, you know you're Mike and you sell pizza. Mm-hmm. So I'm right. Sisterhood Outdoors. I sell sisterhoods. And I know there's a sisterhood for everything, but I just think that the name is what we have created and what it feels like to us when we are experiencing great fellowship together.
Right. So is it the sisterhood, is it a membership or is it a community?
Both.
Okay.
So it started as an online community and a website with events. And I've always had some logo wear for sale. So the membership program was to strengthen the numbers to build the brand. And our members have access to some discount programs, and they also have access to our outfitter directories. They also have access to some members-only events. And those are the main benefits of becoming a member, but they're also supporting our mission, which is to empower the next generation. So that is why we started the membership program. However, you do not have to be a member to sign up for one of our events.
Okay.
That's the number one asked question is, do I have to be a member? I would like for you to be a member, mm-hmm. but you don't have to be a member to participate. You can purchase one of our trips and just head out with us.
Right. So there's more exclusive opportunities and perks with becoming a member though.
That's the programming. Yes.
Right. Okay. What led you to start it? You kind of mentioned a little bit on it earlier, but there's got to be more behind it besides you went to the duck hunt and kind of felt the magic of what happens there. But I mean, this has been something that you've been successfully doing and continuing on for 11 years, right. So, yeah. I mean, not only what led you to start it, but what is it that keeps you going?
I think that the most important thing that keeps me going are the relationships that I'm building and the encouragement that I get in my own life and the lessons that I'm learning as I teach and mentor. It's, you know, it's boring during the months where we don't have any activities going on, and then all of a sudden you're planning for your next event, and I really get excited about it. And when you get the feedback from the new hunters who've gone, or then maybe they're not a new hunter, but it's their first time going on a pheasant hunt, or their first time going on a deer hunt, but they've duck hunted before. So we have a lot of firsts, whether that's completely brand new to the outdoors or first time trying something new. And I get excited about trying new things myself, and I like the challenge, and I'm very ambitious about it. So having that feedback and being there for those first is something that's kind of like a drug to me. I really, really love being there when seeing someone shoot their first pheasant in the field or their first duck or get them out in the wilderness on an elk hunt. Some of my favorite, most challenging things to do were to take women in the wilderness in Wyoming on our pack trips where we horseback in and camp in the high country, because I can't believe that I still look at myself and go, I can't believe I did that. We all need moments where we said, I can't believe I did that.
Right. To be able to be with a supportive, encouraging group while you're doing that and having that experience is huge.
It is. And we've tried to stay, I have some brand rules about what it looks like to be a member of our team, how you project yourself in the outdoors, because I want the reputation for being taken very seriously about safety, about taking care of our clients and our guests, because that is what makes things roll. I want to make sure our outfitters have felt the love and know that we care deeply about our relationships with them, because it's so important that everyone have a good experience. We highly vet them, because I'm very afraid of putting my name on a hunt and the outfitter being a fly-by-night and taking our money and not giving us what we paid for. happens all the time. Don't know that you've ever experienced it, but it does happen.
Okay.
We're trying to avoid that and maintain a level of prestige about our events. And we want everyone to feel welcome. And it's been really cool over the years that I have friends who are retired in their 60s that still hunt with me. I have 20-year-olds who are on their very first time going out into the field. I have women who want to eat only organic food. And so they called me and said, teach me to hunt. So over the years, I've seen, you know, the girlfriend that the boyfriend broke up with her. Now she's got nowhere to go to hunt. So she's going on one trip with us a year just because she doesn't have land anymore. Access is always a problem. So we want to be there to pick up those pieces when people need us and share in that diversity. And that's what I want our brand to be about.
Mm-hmm. So do you have full-time employees that are helping with these events?
We have a contracted marketing person, which is Lindsay Bodimer out of Kansas.
Sure.
She's amazing.
Yes,
so
she is.
So Lindsay helps me with marketing.
Okay.
And the rest of our pro staff are volunteers, just like you would hear of any company that has a field staff or a pro staff. Mm-hmm. And they are chosen through a vetting process of a questionnaire first before we'll even interview you. We want you to answer some questions. We don't take people randomly off the internet without a really high recommendation. Most of our staff, we met in person one day and we said, hey, you'd be good for our team. Mm-hmm. We do that because if I put out field staff internet applications, it would, you know, might inundate us with random questions and it just would be difficult. So we've kept it very, I guess, exclusive to be on our staff, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And
well, with the professional level that you guys are maintaining, that's important.
That's the point. Safety is of most important. I'm the one who has to make sure that no one gets injured or hurt on our trips. It's buck stops with me with safety. So I want them, number one, to be sure and slow down and do a safety briefing. I want them to be enough of a leader to pull a girl from a hunt if they're not adhering to safety meetings. There's ways to do that without, you know, being a total jerk. You're talking about saving lives. So we want to go over firearm safety with everyone. Our partners that we work with that help us with great gear, you know, they expect that level of safety from us. So that's one of the reasons that our girls are chosen the way they're chosen. And the other reason is a lot of them are certified instructors in shotgun, pistol, or rifle. They are outfitters who own their own outfitting business, which is phenomenal to go hunt with a female-owned outfitter and get guided by females. And
that's
they're
awesome.
Really, there's some girls on my team that do that, and I think that's amazing. So love working with them. And we have girls who are dog trainers, just like and train bird dogs. And so we have world champion duck callers on our team. We have goose callers on our team. We have turkey hunting mentors on our team. Which turkey hunting? Lord have mercy. That's the hardest thing that I do is turkey hunt. They get me every year.
So. Oh, girl. We could hold hands on that comment.
Okay.
All my listeners know how much I hate turkeys.
Yeah, I can teach you how to do it, but I can't make you successful. So we'll just leave it at that.
I can't make myself successful.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, so
that is so
the kind
funny.
Of caliber. I'm just wanting, you know, but the point being my girls are not pretty faces on Instagram. They have some meat behind what they're doing and they're very skilled and I require that. To keep the high standards that Sisterhood Outdoors has.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Are you holding events all around the U.S. then?
We do. Coming up, we have a South Dakota dove and pheasant hunt in September. And then we move from there to Wisconsin to a goose hunt. And then we'll be Sitka archery hunting in Maryland. There'll be a white-tailed deer hunt in Georgia. There'll be a cow elk hunt in Wyoming.
Wow.
Then we have an antelope hunt that we sponsor four youth for every year. And we take four young girls and teach them how to hunt big game.
Awesome.
So, and then the rest of the waterfowl's in Kansas, Arkansas. And then we have Georgia hog hunt coming up in the wintertime in February. So kind of a little bit out west, a little bit northeast.
Sure.
A little bit in the southeast. Don't have a lot for the girls in California and the Pacific Northwest. I would like to try to find a way to get more done in that area. Mm-hmm. It's just been harder for me to connect, I guess, with the right people.
Sure. Well, maybe so somebody listening can.
Somebody listening has an outfitter in that area or a group of girls that want to try to help us with an event out that way. I would be happy to talk to them, just because then I look at the calendar, you know, and we do a lot of fishing in Florida. So I want to kind of get that rounded out, part of the United States. And we're going to Africa next May.
Wow.
If COVID allows. We've canceled twice.
Wow. How many people will you take to that event?
To Africa?
Yeah.
I can take up to 10.
Okay. Is that the typical size of your groups?
I would like to say a typical size is 6 to 12.
Okay.
And what we don't want to happen is I don't want to book 12 girls to go on a deer hunting property where there's not enough acreage and there's less opportunity because there's more women. Mm-hmm. Just as if you're turkey hunting and it's 2-on-1 with guides and you got to take a turn, you know, I try to manage the number of people versus what I feel like based on our experience with the outfitter, how we don't overbook to lose opportunity. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely.
So a lot of our hunts will be stopped at 6. Now, if it's duck blinds and goose blinds, or pheasant and dove, or we have multiple fields and multiple blinds and we could put 6 people per blind, then you'll see the numbers go up to 12 or 20. But most of the rifle hunting or game hunting for hogs or turkey or deer or elk or antelope, they're going to be smaller. Okay. And the experience is better if it's smaller. I have more time to teach and mentor if I don't book the group. It just makes more sense to be more intimate and learn more from each other. Mm-hmm.
What's the average number of events that you hold in a year?
Anywhere from as few as 10 to as many as 20 or 25.
Okay. Are you attending all of them personally?
I wish. I get asked that question a lot. When I retire from my day job, I'll do that.
Okay.
When my family's ready, I'm going to do that. But my family's not ready right now, and I got a few more years to go. But
okay,
I do go on 6 or 7 events a year, and I host all the events in Georgia, of course. You will probably find me in Wyoming either on the summer pack trip or the cow elk hunt because I have my heart on that mountain. And so I get to missing it. If I haven't been there in a year, I have to go. So, and then sometimes when I've arranged for a new outfitter that we've just vetted and it's a new hunt, I try to go first and make sure all the kinks are, you know, lined out, that we have a system in place for just returning every year and making it easy. Our hunts sell out very quickly. And multiple of the big game hunts are with the same outfitters every year. So I have standing dates. Mm-hmm. And some of them are pre-sold 2 years in advance.
Wow. That's awesome.
So it's easy for me, the ones that I host. And like, I know one of our field staff, Chrissy's been doing the Sika hunt with Muddy Marsh Outfitters for 7 or 8 years. So it's a well-oiled machine. Like we know exactly how to arrive, what to bring. And so it's great to have outfitter partners. I can't stress that enough. They like us. We like them. We treat them well. They treat us well. We're good for their business. Here's what I think is great about women shooters and women hunters. Well, if we go with Sisterhood Outdoors on an event and we see it and we're in a family that hunts, we're coming home and we're telling our husband, our brothers, our uncles, our dads, whoever will listen, you got to go back with me. It was so great. So like 98% of our guests either repeat return guests to the lodge we choose, or they make a recommendation and someone they know goes.
Right.
And that's amazing to me.
Yeah. Do in all the big game hunts, are the women processing their own animals in the field, or is the outfitter taking care of that part?
So outfitters will help us with quartering and processing deer, hogs, elk, antelope. And we can do whole cuts of meat and debone, and you can take meat home with you, which has been done before. Or we can recommend a local processor. And since we go to a lot of the same areas, we have relationships with the processors and the taxidermist as well. So we advise our clients on what we normally do and what's available to you, and let you make your own choice. Mm-hmm. If it's, and it's not unheard of for our staff member to be the one to actually teach you how to quarter your deer and process the meat. We're advising our clients to know the game laws in their own states for CWD, for crossing borders with brain matter or bone material. So we go to Wyoming, I can't bring an elk back just quartered in my truck to Georgia because of the CWD rules. And so we try to educate each person. You're responsible for knowing what you need to do for your state. And if you have an issue with not being able to bring, you know, whole cuts back, then we help you debone it, or we'll have it processed for you at a processor. But we love teaching that. It's a skill that's kind of gross at first, and there's a safe way to do it and a not so safe way to do it. Right. We don't like you get your finger sliced. So we go over, you know, handling your knives. But yeah, there's multiple choices, and we are always available to help our clients with their processing.
Do you find that a lot of them want to learn that, the process of doing that?
I do. They're very curious, and they want to see us. They want to breast the birds out. They want to, you know, if we do pheasant hunts, I know a lot of the girls want to go and help because they want the rooster feathers, and they're going to take the feathers home. They want the whole bird plucked. Some of them just want the breast. But most often, everyone wants all of the meat they can get on our hunts. And sometimes we share meat if someone wasn't successful filling a tag and someone else is willing to share. I've seen girls split processing fees and split animals for just so everybody can have a little. It's so nice to see that they shared. But yeah, they really want to get their hands on it and see how to do it so they can be self-sufficient at home. And we're happy to help them do it.
That's great. Do you have like a requirement as far as the experience level of people coming? Are some of your hunts specific to beginners and some specific to experienced, or are all of the events open to all levels?
All events are open to all levels. However, I recommend that you notify me or your host immediately if you are, you know, brand new and you need extra support, because we want to make sure you get it. I have taken, and oddly enough, one of my staff members was the person I took to Wyoming on a backcountry elk hunt. She waterfowl hunted and archery hunted like a beast, like completely expert, but had never shot a rifle, never been camping, never rode a horse, and never big game hunted before. And I had no idea. You make assumptions about people. And I just thought, since she did archery and waterfowl, she might know a little bit, but she knew nothing. And then I had no idea she'd never ridden a horse or camped in the wilderness.
Yeah.
So we were like, just come on. And she had the best time. It was a life-changing experience. She was successful. It was hard. The whole experience was just life-changing for her. So we can, you know, get you there and take care of you there. I know on my rifle deer hunt in Georgia every year, the outfitter is actually really into teaching and mentoring as well. So the guides come into the lodge and we do safety debriefs. We sight in rifles. They talk about tree stand safety. We talk about walking in and out. We talk about quartering. We talk about choosing the right deer. And it feels like I'm teaching more than I'm hunting, which I am actually on that trip. But it's great because I think there's no such thing as a bad question. Just ask. We'll be happy to help.
Yeah. And those first time experiences for a lot of people, are you providing, like you said, that you're sighting in rifles? So for some of them, it could be their first time shooting a rifle. So are they
Absolutely.
And even with shotgun, are you ensuring that they have those opportunities to shoot, to practice shooting before they're going out into the field?
We have, sometimes we'll have firearms partners send us guns for demo guns. So we are always able to provide and share our equipment. So if you were to come hunting and you didn't have a shotgun or you didn't have a rifle, we're always going to provide some equipment or share what we have. Mm-hmm. We always do firearm safety first and foremost, and we do a briefing inside. And then we have places where we go outside at a lot of our duck lodges. We can throw clays and just let you shoulder a gun or go find somewhere safe to just shoulder a gun and pull the trigger so you can get a feel of how to mount the shotgun and safely engage the safety. We want to talk about duck hunting. We talk about blind safety, entering and exiting the blind, keeping your muzzle control at all times, finger off the trigger, never clicking your safety off before a guide tells you. And I think for me personally, learning it, and even like pheasant hunting, the last tower shoot I did here in Georgia, I'm following the 20 degree rule, and there was a lot of guys on the field that I was on that were asking me why I didn't shoot those birds. And I'm like, those weren't my birds. They, you know, cause they're not in my 20 degree safety angle, and I'm not going to turn and shoot during one of those tower shoots because it's just too dangerous. But so we want to set an example. We want to be able to put the firearm in your hands. We want to go over all safety rules with you and make sure that you're comfortable and confident. And I think we've done that for lots of women, and it's something that we're committed to doing.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that they are seeking that because they are having hesitations of pulling that trigger on, you know, whichever, whether it be a rifle or a shotgun, that they do want that experience behind it first?
Yeah, I think so. I sit with and mentor in the stands or in the blinds with women, and I've done it for years. And I kind of have a conversation with them like, do you want me to tell you, you know, shoot it now? Are you, you know, get on it? Are you on it? Are you on it? Shoot it now. Yeah. Or do you just think you can just breathe and shoot it yourself, or you want to make the decision? That's a conversation a coach needs to have before you go into the game. Mm-hmm. Because I've miscommunicated before where they were waiting on me and I was waiting on them because we didn't have a real clear understanding of how much coaching that person really needed. And for duck blinds, I tend to tell my new shooters that even if they're late on the shot, because we always have some expert shooters around, they're going to pop up and shoot that duck, and it's going to be in the lake or in the water before you feel like you've even mounted your gun. If you don't stand up, mount the gun, pull the trigger, and try to see the duck, you can't train for that at home. You need to go out in the field and do it. So I'd say every time that they call a shot, you need to come up and shoot, whether you think you're anywhere close. Because everybody's going to shoot at the same time. It's the only way you're going to see the picture that we need you to see to start getting your gun on the birds. And I think that's, you know, it makes it more fun, actually, once they start getting the confidence to stand up and shoot when someone calls a shot. And they've done the shot a few times, then they start to see the shot picture and realize what the targets are doing, like how the ducks are flying or what we're doing with our barrels. And I think, and they keep to kind of catch up on the gun, for lack of a better word, to get faster on the mount and get your barrel out and clicking off your safety. Everything has to happen. And it's a sequence of, you know, events that you have to practice in the field. Mm-hmm. It's great to be there with women when they're successful.
Yes. I mean, I think even after 11 years that I've been hunting, I still am like, my safety was on. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, I totally have had that happen. And I think that's a good problem to have. I'm glad your safety's the only thing you've done wrong right now.
Yeah, right, right. Out of all the events that you attend and do, what has been your favorite to date?
I would have to say the cow elk pack trip is probably tied with one we did called the Goose Hunt for the Girls. And Goose Hunt for the Girls was in Nebraska at the North Platte Outpost. And we had some wonderful fellowship, and we raised $5,000 for breast cancer awareness, but it was for Shooting Sports for Cancer donated it to a local hospital in Nebraska where we hunted, and that $5,000 paid for mammogram screenings for ladies with no insurance.
Wow, that's incredible. And
it was a very big undertaking. We had a great group of women, like 8 or 10 women. The lodge donated the lodging and the food. The guides donated their time to take us out into the Platte River, and they brought their dogs, and we had 2 days of hunting in the blinds and 2 days of fellowship in the lodge, and we all paid for the hunt, and all of the money that we paid for the hunt went straight to that cause. And North Platte Outpost, which is part of High Adventure Company, they worked with us to make this happen, and we did a second year with them. So those kind of trips always resonate with me, you know, that we are able to put together women who are willing to spend that kind of money to come and do something charitable and mm-hmm. spend that time together. Hunting was kind of the first of its kind. And my field staff, Megan Beach, helped put that together, and it was just phenomenal.
Nice. Do you find that a lot of the women are coming back to more events after they've already been to one, or maybe even the same event every year?
Yeah, we have a lot of repeat business. I'm very happy about that and excited, because sometimes it's people that I've become friends with, and I'm like, oh, good, you're going on that trip with us. So, yeah, we have a lot of repeat business. We have a lot of people who will do just one thing exclusively, you know, and come back every year to the same events. And then we have other people who, once they've come on one event, they're a serial booker and they book something with me every year.
That's awesome. What are you finding is the most popular event? Like, once you post it, what fills up the fastest every time that people are just waiting to hear about?
That has to be our cow elk pack trip.
Okay.
I'm sold out 2 years in advance. I have a standing date with the outfitter. We don't change the dates. That way I can just keep advertising it. If I put it up, it's gone. It's 6 women, horseback. They go into 8,000 feet elevation in the Shoshone Wilderness outside of Cody, Wyoming in late October. And they camp in wilderness tents with pipe stoves. They're eating Dutch oven and campfire foods and cowboy coffee. And they elk hunt off horseback. And it's not very expensive. It's a couple $1,000s. Mm-hmm. It's like $2,000 or $2,200. A tag is only $300. So you basically get that $10,000 trophy bull elk experience for half the price, and you still get meat in your freezer.
Wow. That sounds like a great time.
Yeah, I think that the majestics of the mountain and the whole backcountry experience is what makes it sell. And I think if you've talked to any of my past guests, and I'm a serial goer, I've gone all but 2 years. But it's such an achievement to be able to take a girl that doesn't live out there, that doesn't experience that kind of backcountry wilderness on a regular basis, or has never experienced it, and then get to be on a really good horse with really good outfitters and have great food. And it's just, it's kind of a tough one to say, but it's kind of like a journey rather than a hunt.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's 4 or 5 days on the mountain and you come off a different person. I'd be surprised if you asked anyone, you know, that they would say, yeah, that trip was something that I'll remember the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, do you find that there's difficulty taking the city woman into mm-hmm. the wilderness where they have struggles of you?
Yeah, we've had some backaches and pains and some kind of whiningness, but yeah. I'm such a happy, joyful person. And I just want to say, hey, you know, you got this. And when people are supported and if they need to pout, you know, I tell my hosts worry about this all the time. They're so worried if a girl's not happy. Not everybody's going to be happy all the time. Some people are going to struggle through a day. Let them struggle through the day. Just be there for them. Be a good listener. And, you know, they are a paid guest. They're there to hunt and they can have the best experience of their life, or they can, you know, not so much because they have too much fear, or they're uncomfortable and they're cold because their gear's not so good. Mm-hmm. Do everything you can to help make them comfortable, but give everybody their space. And I think it's a real recipe for success.
Right. Are they prompted or are they prepared? Like, you're going to be pooping in the woods. You aren't.
Oh, that's the number one question. Nail the head. Where do I go to the bathroom is the number one question for that.
Right.
So just because there's podcast listeners, the answer to that is poop wherever you need to. But there's a latrine at camp. So we have a hole in the ground and a little tent and a little potty seat. And it's not right inside camp. It's a little further out. I usually take a buddy with me when I go. Personally, I don't leave my horse or my guides too far to go to the bathroom off the trail. It is grizzly country. Just tell your guide to turn around and do your business.
Yep.
I take a Ziploc bag with me and I pack out all of my toilet paper and wipes or any kind of wet wipe or anything I use that has an odor. Mm-hmm. And I stick it in the fire when I get back to camp. So that's the questions that, yeah, you're right. That's the hardest one.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, sometimes people don't prepare for that. It's overlooked of, mm-hmm. We don't have flushing toilet stations throughout your journey or at
That's
camp.
Correct.
This will be a thing. And there's some legit technique into
Absolutely.
Doing it properly, right?
So, right.
I mean, do you guys, I understand you go over shotgun safety, but do you go over like, this is a good crouching position?
No, I don't know that we give that kind of detail.
Okay.
I think most people just want to know, like, I'm okay telling you, I don't go. I get off my horse and walk around the back of the horse, kind of let it know I'm there, you know, because it won't kick me. And I'm kind of, I'm back here. And I tell a guy, turn around, I got to pee. I'm not ashamed of it. And then, of course, deer hunting, you get all kinds of information about whether or not to pee in the woods or to collect your pee or not. And I'm just like, I hunt the wind, I pee. And I usually pee when I try to hold it and pee when I get down.
Yeah.
And I'm done hunting. I try not to drink too much. And duck blinds, I mean, come on, we're going into a pit blind in the middle of a lake. There's no bathroom.
Right.
So I don't drink much coffee that morning. I usually just kind of dehydrate a little bit till I get back to the lodge.
Yeah, because you have to prepare things that you don't normally have to think about. That's legit preparation.
No joke. We have lots of lists our staff provide our guests with, and the years that we've done the multiple duck hunts, the multiple waterfowl, same guides every year, the big game that we do, same guides every year, we have systems. Like, we can tell you, answer any question because we've been doing it so long. And people laugh at me at the cow elk hunt because I'm like, I have a sleeping bag, a pillow, and I wear my clothes and take some underwear. You don't need any gear. Like, just because it says you can take 25 pounds of gear, don't take 25 pounds of gear. Nobody cares if you change clothes in 4 days on the mountain.
Right. You know, I was just talking to a friend about kind of like this situation last night because he's looking at getting started in upland hunting. And like, yeah, I will totally mentor you and I'll appreciate it because As much as I love hunting with women, it's really difficult to find women that will go with me where it's a 4 or 5 night just driving somewhere, sleeping in your truck every night, not having a shower, and hunting sun up till sundown. And
I would be all over that.
Right? I mean, that it's my jam, right? But it's right? Very difficult to find women, hunting partners that are down with that.
Sky There's plenty in our group that would do it with you. I just
let's go.
We just all live across too far across the United States from each other.
Yeah. Well, if you guys want to come to Montana, I'm always looking for hunting buddies in Eastern Montana when I go out there, because it's solo trips. You know, my husband and I can't both get away with the kids. Yeah. So we take turns and
nice.
Yeah. So we're usually each out there by ourselves until the kids are older, but
very yeah. Cool. The one thing I want to try to do is a Western grouse hunt. I've never grouse hunted.
Oh man.
I don't know how to organize a girl's grouse hunt. Cause like there's not really a grouse outfitter. Does that make sense?
Yes. So I got to tell you, I'm not trying to pitch this here by any means, but we just started our first Western grouse camp. We opened it yesterday.
Well, you need to email me that information.
Registration. Yeah, I will. It's going to rock, Amy. I'll send it to you, but I won't spend time pitching it here, but yes, cause this is about your thing.
I'll that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mostly the grouse just scare me to death when you flush one and you're hiking in the woods. And I'm like, one day.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I suppose that scare is going to be completely typical of the excitement that people experience. So, right. You know, right. The same reaction, the same heart palpitations are increasing on you, and yeah.
Correct. And I think that's one of my favorite things about pheasant and quail hunting is, you know, walking and flushing and having it happen, the birds fly up in front of you. Yeah. It's just something you can't explain unless you've done it. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the sound of a flush. It's yep. Music to your ears. You dream about it at night. Well, some of us that have this sick bird addiction do at least.
Right. Bird dog addiction is a right. Disease.
It's hardcore.
We have BDA.
Oh, I like that. I suffer from BDA. We should have
let's use it.
BDA Anonymous. There's worse things.
Right.
So tell me, what does the future of Sisterhood Outdoors look like? Are you looking to make any changes or increase events? What do you guys got going?
Well, we struggled through COVID last year with some of our events canceling. So we started something called Sisterhood Saturdays, where our staff members just tried to do a day trip around their area. We kind of took it local. But we're going to stay true to the mission and run the calendar and just slowly add to it. You know, I spent a lot of time outdoors during COVID and quarantining and working from home. I felt like it was the safest place to be.
Yeah. Well, and as you know, I've been vaccinated and I still got COVID last week. So you can do the best you can.
Right. And that's what we're trying to do. We offer our clients, we're partnered with a company called Global Rescue, and they sell travel insurance, medical insurance, and security evacuation insurance. So you can become a member of their and do an annual membership with them. And basically, if you get evacuated from a vacation or you need help getting evacuated from a vacation, they'll be there for you. And they'll cover costs that your medical insurance won't cover. So I purchased an annual membership because I realize in the wilderness, in the backcountry, if I twist my ankle, if I get altitude sickness, if I get COVID, if I get the flu, I fall off a horse, I mean, anything can happen. And those bills to get life flighted out of there on a helicopter is $40,000, $50,000.
Wow.
and your insurance may or may not pay it. So we offer that. You can purchase it by the week for, like, if you're going on one Sisterhood Outdoors event and you're just going to be gone for 7 days, you can buy a 7-day plan. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do the annual membership, but we started offering that years ago because of some of the backcountry incidents that we've lived through on some of our trips and what we've learned over the years. So that gives me a little bit of peace of mind that I've offered all of our clients that extra medical protection, extra travel insurance.
That's a great idea.
It's taken advantage of probably at a rate of about 20 to 30%. So not everybody's taking advantage of it, but it's offered on every trip.
Mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give to someone that has been, you know, on the fence about going to one of these events? What can you tell them to expect getting from it?
I think it would be something that you should do to just find some friendship and joy in your life in the outdoors. If you like the outdoors, you should hang out with the Sisterhood Outdoors. And if you've never been outdoors and you're curious to what it's like, I hope we set a good example for you and you'll take your, you know, your first event will be with us.
What else are you involved with, Amy? Because you have, besides all this and a full-time job, right?
Yes.
You also do some things for Shoot Like a Girl.
That's correct. So Shoot Like a Girl is an organization that teaches women and empowers women in shooting sports. And Karen Butler's the owner, and she has a trailer, semi-trailer, that has a simulator inside it. That's a very state-of-the-art computer-aided simulator for a pistol or rifle, and they also have an archery range inside the trailer. And that trailer moves around the country to lots of different events. And I'm one of their instructors. So probably for 6 or 7 years, I've volunteered or worked for them as an instructor for pistol and rifle. And the team of girls that's on that training circuit with them to go train others are just top notch in the nation, if you ask me. Karen has one of the best teams in the United States as far as teaching women shooting sports. So when the trailer moves on the schedule for all these events that she puts together, the staff members fly in for the weekend to run the simulator and teach. So there's weekends out of the year that I'll be with the Shoot Like a Girl team teaching. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal organization, proud to be a partner with them. We feel like Shoot Like a Girl is a great way to learn to build confidence in your shooting skills and start out in the simulator. There's a gun bar outside the trailer that's like every single firearm on the market today. So if you wanted to hold it, touch it, feel it, talk to someone about how it works, what's the right pistol for you, or they're available to do that. So she's growing women in shooting sports and I'm growing women in hunting. So we have a great partnership because if we can teach you to shoot and get you confident shooting, whether it's archery, pistol, or rifle, then you may want to enter into hunting next. And so we do partner with them on occasion. And I really, really am proud to be a part of their staff.
Awesome. You see, yeah, so they were in Missoula last year at Cabela's, right? Bass Pro. Mm-hmm. Were you there?
I was not there, but I okay. remember that being on the schedule.
Okay. Yep. So I went to that. It was cool. It was very cool. Yeah. It was a cold, rainy day and
working anyway.
They were absolutely, they were out there and handing out the masks, and I was able to try the archery simulation. So that was cool. Something new for me. But yeah, having that gun bar out front was really neat too, just to be able to hold those pistols and try each one out of what feels good. And they even pointed right. out, this is the way you should be holding it. So like, well, that probably yeah, that's would a make really, me a bit more successful.
Yeah. It's very, I mean, it's really rewarding to be in the trailer for a weekend at any of the events, because we watch women completely overcome their fear mm-hmm. of learning to shoot. And it's just really exciting to be there for them and have the information that the partners that Karen has put together mm-hmm. to make sure that there's, you know, so many choices in the marketplace and we're able to educate women about those partners' products is really cool.
So let's talk about gear and guns a little bit, because you've been doing it. You've been trying a lot of different kind of women's gear, shooting a lot of different guns. So I'm anxious to pick your brain about all that. What's your favorite pants for duck hunting?
Pants for duck hunting. Mm-hmm. Drake waterfowl is what I wear.
Okay. And what are you shooting?
Beretta A400.
All right. Is that 12 gauge?
12 gauge.
Awesome. What about for upland?
I have a Beretta gold pigeon and a Beretta silver pigeon.
You're Beretta dedicated, aren't you?
I am at the moment. The gold pigeon and the silver pigeon were my dad's. So cool. If I'm upland hunting, I'm taking those guns. I also have a Benelli Montefeltro sporting gun that I like will use for waterfowl, pheasant. I'll teach with that gun. I do sporting clays with that gun as well.
Is that a 20 or a 12?
12.
Okay. You're not shooting any 20 gauges then?
My silver pigeon is a 20 gauge.
Okay.
Shoot it very often.
You don't shoot it very often?
No, but my next gun, because you know your first gun's never your last gun.
Yes.
My next gun is going to be the Beretta Vittoria 20 gauge mm-hmm. sporting gun.
Okay.
That's cool. That's what I want to do for my next purchase.
What are you wearing for upland hunting?
I have, and everybody's going to hate me for saying this because they're really old pants, but probably 10 years ago, Eddie Bauer used to do field clothes for women. They don't do them anymore. So I have a pair of brush pants from Eddie Bauer that have lasted 10 years and that are phenomenal.
Wow. Well, so I wonder why they're not doing them anymore.
They need to do it because I have a pair of Orvis brush pants as well. Mm-hmm. And they're just softer. They're not as durable.
Okay.
And they don't wash as good as the Eddie Bauer ones.
Okay. So maybe not as ideal for like brambles, thick brush stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, that to me, women complain every year that there's not enough good pheasant hunting type field pants available to them. If it's a groomed area with just grasses and I know it's not very briars or that kind of thing, I may have on, almost always have on tall snake boots in the South, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And in the wintertime, I would probably have on waterproof same boots I would take big game hunting in the snow and sleet and the rain. I would take bird hunting in the snow and the sleet and the rain.
Which are what boots?
I have two favorites. One is dry shod rubber boots.
Okay.
And the other one is the Kennetrek hiking mountain extremes.
Awesome. I just got Kennetreks a couple months ago, so I'm going through the breaking in process with them yet, but my husband has worn them for a couple of years and they're super lightweight, great support. So I'm really excited to wear them this season.
They keep my feet warm and dry.
Priorities.
Yes, they are.
What apparel are you wearing for big game hunting?
I'm changing it up this year. I am a taller individual, so I can wear more of the men's sizes comfortably, which has been a blessing. I'm retiring some really old Cabela's Outfit Her gear that was tried and true on the mountain, by the way. Mm-hmm. Never cold, never wet. But I inherited some of my dad's hunting clothes, and he had some Kuyu pants and sweaters, mm-hmm. and they fit me perfect.
Nice.
So I ordered their insulated bibs, and they now have a women's parka, which is like the lightweight permaloft or goose down type jacket that's really packable with a hood and super warm. So I just purchased them this summer and I'm excited to have them on the mountain this year. My lightweight gear Gosh, it could be any brand. I have a closet full of brands. I'm not aligned with anyone in particular. I have patterns I like in different places.
Yep.
And I don't want to freeze. So when I'm in the backcountry, and if I don't feel like I can't roll around on the ground in the snow and the mud and not freeze to death, I don't want to wear it. So I have to have Gore-Tex, which is Kugis, the Toray insulated stretch. And then like my Drake waterfowl bibs, I've hunted in like, you know, negative 20 degree winds and that stuff. And I've been okay. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's what works and what fits.
What is your favorite upland bird recipe?
Oh, I have a Traeger pellet grill. So my favorite thing to do is just a little bit of olive oil.
Okay.
A little bit of sprinkle seasons and put them on the smoker.
Nice. Just taking the flavor in.
Yeah. I'll do whole birds. I'll just do the breasts, whatever they gave me. I'll put it all in the smoker.
Awesome. Cool. Well, this has been fun, Amy.
I know. Excited to get to meet you and
I know.
Do this with you.
Absolutely. Tell listeners how they can connect with you and where they can go to find out what events are coming up to put on their calendars with Sisterhood Outdoors.
So our website is sisterhoodoutdoors.com. There's a contact form there that comes directly to me if you wanted to ask a question. There's a phone number on there that will come directly to me if you need to call me, and you can register for our events online. I would like to say that when you register, you can pay a deposit. Deposits are non-refundable. The reason deposits are non-refundable is because we don't want our outfitters to never work with us again because we don't pay them well. So when you make a deposit, it's non-refundable, but we will let you make payments on your trip up until you go. So we invoice you for the balance and let you make partial payments, which has been really tedious process for us in the back office, but I think it's very important for our clientele to have that option. So you can register online for any of the events, and you can also find us on Facebook and social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and we have a private group page for women only called Sisterhood of the Outdoor Girls. And you have to ask to be a member of that group because we keep it private, keep the men out, and we want it to be a safe place for you to ask questions and learn anything you need to learn about the outdoors.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Amy Ray. If you're interested in hearing about future events that she and Sisterhood Outdoors have to offer, be sure to reach out to them. Share this episode with someone that might be interested or could benefit from hearing it. My guests and I love to hear your feedback. And please don't forget to support the sponsors and partners of this podcast and the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.